Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of August 2022. Welcome to episode 87 of this podcast series. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which should make this, if you squint just right, pretty much the comic books I read during August. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost those through my Facebook and Twitter. You can find those lists, but those are not exactly spoilers for the podcast, since those are just lists. And here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. Sir Luke of the Upstate wrote, Luke, the Upstate Kid, wrote in. Professor, with July firmly established as Western Comics Month, I must admit that I've been looking forward to it for several months. The long history of Western comics here in the U.S., as well as the enduring popularity of the genre domestically and internationally, means that there's quite a lot of content to choose from. Also, while using the hashtag, one discovers that the genre has many more fans than might immediately be obvious, more so than any of the other generic seasonal readings, with the exception of maybe horror. Western comics brings out a strong engagement and response from comics fans, and that response is heartening. Your readings this month reflect this variety and were a pleasure to hear. I definitely would like to track down the Calgary Stampede issue of Archie you mentioned, and all those weird westerns got my attention as well. Stand out for my own hashtag Western Comics Month include two volumes of the Belgian comic Lonesome, published by Cinebook and available on Hoopla, detailing a lone rider getting himself mixed up in the skirmishes between abolitionists and anti-abolitionists on the Kansas-Missouri border, but for his own personal reasons. Lonesome is created by Yves Swolfs, who also created the earlier Western comic Durango, a strong spaghetti Western style of story easily reflecting its Eurocomics origin, and also very much recommended. Also, I read a fun coverless issue of Judge Colt, which was sent to me through the Comic Book Circle of Life, as well as some vintage public domain Charltons, including Cheyenne Kid and Kid Montana. Finally, Western Comics Month for me would not be complete without some hijinks and laughs in the form of an issue of Gabby Hayes Western, again from the public domain. In addition to the comics, I also read the novel Wyoming by noted Western author Zane Grey. I will interrupt Luke right here to note that he means Ohio native Zane Grey, born in the city of, seriously, Zanesville. Pretty sure that's where they got his name from. Luke says he was expecting something set in the post-Civil War period, and I suppose that is what I got from a certain point of view. The novel was published in 1932 and is set at that time. Gray tells a tale of two Eastern tenderfoots moving out west independently to find themselves only to end up on the same ranch entangling with cattle rustlers while they fall for one another. A good reminder that Westerns do not always need to necessarily fit the standard elements, especially when it comes from one of the genre's masters. Besides the Westerns, one issue which stood out to me from your reading, Professor, was the silent issue of Batman Toyman. Not at all familiar with this series, but the fact that it is a silent comic book written by Larry Hama immediately piqued my interest. Hama, of course, was responsible for the most famous and well-regarded silent comic of all time, the legendary Silent Interlude from G.I. Joe 21. Hama has revisited the concept a couple of times over the years, but as I had never heard of this series, this one was new to me. Yes, I imagine, Luke, that that was the reference of him doing this silent issue in this series, but I wasn't sure of the details or the timeline, so I didn't pursue that on the episode, but I'm glad that you confirmed all of that information for me, Luke. Dragon Wheels also sounded like it would be right up my alley, but given my affection for 1/64th diecast cars, that's not really a surprise, is it? Additionally, Jughead Grillmaster has just made my summer reading list. Looking forward to hearing about King Kirby, as well as everything else which you read next month. Until then, I remain your devoted listener, Luke. Thank you, Luke. Kid Shane Kelly said he listened to the episode the morning it came out. Almost made me want to read a Western. Well, that is a bold proclamation, Shane. Bold. And from Gunfighting's Michael Bailey. Professor Allen, one of the reasons I listen to your shows is that you have a dry sense of humor, which might be the best kind. A good example of this was your comments about the RoboCop story you read. Made me chuckle. Out loud, even. I've been digging the monthly themes that have been chosen for the reading, and this month was no exception. Like most genres that aren't people in colorful costumes fighting crime, I like Westerns, but have never done a serious dive into them. Movie-wise, I'm similar to Shag, in that I've watched several, including Silverado and Lonesome Dove and some Eastwood flicks, but no deep investigations there. And just to interrupt here, Mike, look, I'm not here to give advice or make corrections, but you really should never use the words, "I'm similar to Shag," in any context. It can be used against you in many state courts. And I know you know this. We were in the same Welcome to Podcasting HR meeting where this was discussed. So, you know, just be careful with your words, okay? Mike continues. Same with comics, though I do have enough familiarity to think that DC's Western bench is much better than Marvel's. I like Batlash, Jonah Hex, Scalp Hunter, and El Diablo. They were part of a fantastic novel published in the mid-aughts called DC Universe Trail of Time, which mixes several of DC's superheroes, well, heroes in the form of Superman, some of their mystical characters, and a handful of these Western guys. Anyway, sounds like you had a great month. Take care, and I totally agree about mermaid girlfriends in college. Regards, Gunfighting's Michael Bailey. Thank you. Yes, I do tend to find the DC Western characters to be more distinct from each other, each with their own vibe and backstory that I don't get as often in the Marvels and Charltons, which tend to have Western books and characters that are a little more same-same. And dude, please, you know that what happens in the I Had a Mermaid Girlfriend in College support group stays in the I Had a Mermaid Girlfriend in College support group. Okay? And we got this via Pony Express from Sir Ange, the kid medic. Hey, Prof. Sounds like a fun month. I'm not a huge reader of Western comics, but I did love the Palmiotti Gray Jonah Hex series. As you said, solid one and dones for the most part. They also brought in a bevy of fantastic artists. I often felt nostalgic because I would buy that book based on the cover or the artist on the issue. That felt a bit like the spinner rack, where the right image would spur a purchase, pun intended. I suppose that sort of intermittent purchase pattern doesn't work in this current market where stores have to buy based on presumed sales. Such a shame. As for the rest of your reads, I have memories of the build-up to the Helix imprint. It was originally called Matrix, by the way, but the hit movie quickly squelched that idea. Second, it was pitched like Vertigo, but instead of weird, this was sci-fi for the more mature reader. But mostly, I remember it for the one book I did read from Helix, Howard Chaykin's Cyberella. It's a mishmash of many Chaykin tropes, media influences, the devil, the general population being bamboozled by the government, But this is a series where Chaykin reads like he hates his audience, insulting comic readers in places, which doesn't feel good when you are his audience. It also includes a fairly withering indictment of the extreme nature of the 90s and image at that time. For a longtime fan of his work, Cybarella feels like a curiosity. Perhaps I will ask him about it should I see him at a con soon. Enjoy Kirby Month. Thank you, Doc. But I have to say, this note severely disappoints me. Because you see, I always expect Chaykin references from you to be much earlier in your comments. You're slipping, man. Slipping. Social media support for last episode came from Nathaniel Devon Sanford, Jeremiah, the notorious JJG, Chris Bailey, a.k.a. Charlton Hero, Dave's Comic Heroes blog, The Telltale Mind, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, the W2M Network, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen, Sir I Was Joe from the 21st Century Boys podcast, Sir Martin of Grey, Ruth and Darren from Trekker Talk and other rad podcasts, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Ed from Teal Productions, the Lady Laurel from the Hunters podcast, the Stop, Let's Team Up podcast, Billy D from Magazines and Monsters, Derek WC, King Dinosaur, the MRP Missives, Paul the Book Guy, Chris Leiden 7, Spy Vinyl, Pat from the Longbox Crusade, Ranger Gord from Prayer at Justice, the Vigilante podcast, Chris Ouellette, Vic and Phoenix, and Clinton from Fan Film Fridays. And now, on to the books I read last month, as we do on this show. I categorize the books that I read. And first up are issues that I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. For an upcoming episode of Magazines and Monsters, me and Sir Luke Giaconetti joined Billy D to talk about Hero for Hire 8 and 9, the famous story involving Luke Cage, Dr. Doom, and an unpaid bill. For Quarterman 186 for September's hashtag Fantasy Comics Month episode, I read Camelot 3000 1 and 2. And comics I read for listening to podcasts, and they're getting to be a really good number of these most months because DC Infinite app. And I love following along with comic book podcasts when I get the chance, and the app certainly gives me more chances to have that chance. Thank you, DC Comic themed podcasters, for listening along with Laurel, aka Mountain Flower, and her crew on episodes 187 and 188 of Feathers and Foes. I read from the 2011 Gail Simone run, Birds of Prey 10 and 11, the end of the Death of Oracle storyline, and then a standalone that wraps up a Huntress Catman storyline. I enjoyed that last one, issue 11, a lot more than the hosts did, I think. And for listening along with Shag, I know. What was I thinking? On the latest episode of his JLI blah 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 podcast, I read Justice League America 49, the penultimate chapter of the General Glory saga. To listen along with the new Batman Family Reunion podcast, I read Batman Family 8, featuring a full-length solo Robin adventure, which seemed like a big deal, actually, and also a very questionable Batman reprint featuring the major supervillain, the Spinner, and a Batgirl reprint where she wins her election to the U.S. House. And for episode 5 of Billy D's new podcast, The Brave and the Bob, I read Brave and the Bold 156, teaming up Batman and Dr. Fate to root out corruption at... Are you sitting down? This is going to be hard to believe. But to root out corruption in the Gotham PD. And then on to the general comics reading that I did. And we start with the new comics that we read right off the digital shelves. We have some more from Hoopla, two of which are from Boom, which releases comics, or at least some titles, within a month or so after the physical copy comes out. So for last month, that would be Something is Killing the Children, 23 and 24, which has our monster-hunting heroine, Erica Slaughter, formerly of the House of Slaughter, formerly of the Order of St. George, making an alliance with a small-town sheriff to take down a monster. But the thing about the Order of St. George is that they don't like freelance monster hunters, especially if they are formerly members of the Order. So they have sent Cutter out towards Erica's part of the world to take her out. Drama upon drama in this excellent series. And I went back a few months to get caught up on a current title from Titan Comics, again through Hoopla, Doctor Who Origin 1 through 3, featuring the fugitive doctor portrayed on the screen by Joe Martin. This is a story of her time in the mysterious Division, being sent on a mission to destroy threats to Gallifrey. Except that when she and her new companion Taslow discover that the planets they are to wipe out are just peaceful places that have been colonized by divergent Time Lords? And when the Doc confronts a powerful member of Division, will Taslow have her back or shoot her in the back? Good setup, good story, good drama, and the ending of issue 3 makes me want to read issue 4. As discussed on a recent episode of Relatively Geeky Presents, I picked up grab bags recently. And from those, I read at the personal request of poor Gene Hendricks, Thunderstrike, number 1. The first explosive issue. And joke as I do about the 90s-ness of this title, it was a fun read. Yes, it is Thunderstrike versus Blood Axe, in case you didn't believe me about the 1990s part. But DeFalco and friends are solid professionals, and I found myself actually interested in issue 2, Thunderstrike versus Juggernaut. I mean, this wasn't great, don't get me wrong, but it certainly wasn't bad. And also Adventure Time 49 from Boom. I'm pretty sure I've not seen a second of this show, but know a decent amount from general pop culture osmosis. It looked like the cartoon, so if you like that, you'd probably like this. It was well written, with some funny bits and a little poignancy. And from the 50-cent boxes at Pulp Reality, I read a nice run of a series, King Conan 21 through 26, all written by Alan Zelenitz. This is an ongoing storyline here of the death of Conan's son, Khan, and all the stuff spinning out of that. We have Conan grieving, and then seeking vengeance of any kind, even on people who may not have been responsible. And then maybe Khan being resurrected, but maybe not. Decent stories. I did like the connected nature of these building an ongoing epic tale. That was very well done. And I like dipping into these stories from later in Conan's life. Also, from there, I read a range of Falling Apart issues, Adventure Comics 312, 336, 356, and 372, all featuring the Legion. I think two of those were from Hoopla. None of these are connected in any way via plot, but the first two issues did make for a nice little Lightning Lad series. In 312, he came back to life, thanks to the sacrifice of the heroic Prody, a.k.a. Chameleon Boy's pet. And then in 336, we learn that the supervillain Starfinger is, in fact, Lightning Boy himself. Uh-oh. I enjoy these 1960s Legion stories. They have a joy to them that certainly exceeds their literary quality. But there are moments of real storytelling and character in these as well. And also, Tomorrow Knights, with a K. Number 1, a giant size from Epic, from a series that went 6 issues. And let that be a lesson. If you want me to spend 50 cents on your comic that I've never heard of, at least make it double-sized. That helps the decision-making process quite a bit. In terms of quantity versus quality, the number of pages here was probably more appealing in the long run than what was on those pages. It was fine. It was okay. Decent political intrigue, near future sci-fi. But I'm not dying to get the other issues. Our friend, Sir Dr. Ange, recently attended the Terrificon Con in Connecticut. In addition to sending me a sweet poster of the Doomtastic cover of Secret Wars 10, signed by Jim Shooter, which was pretty epic, he also tossed in a handful of not-so-expensive comics, which was also pretty epic, including the first issue of a series I collected all the way back in the 70s and really enjoyed, although I haven't revisited it for a while, but I was excited to reread Secret Society of Supervillains number 1 from 1976. I was overseas at the time when these came out, but I think I had all of them at the time. There was a department store, this was in Thailand, that had some American comics. I may have picked them up then. I just remember that the very first database system I had, which was handwritten index cards in a box, was from that general area, and I definitely recall SSOSV having its own card. So I had some of these at or around this original date. And I know I was influenced by this book, reading it and rereading it and rereading it, because that is the only thing that will explain the soft spot I have in my heart for Copperhead, a really lame villain, and also Gorilla Grodd, who's a pretty awesome villain. And also, this is from later in the series, Captain Comet. To me, Captain Comet and Copperhead are woefully underrated and underused. But in retrospect, that's only because I read this series over and over when I was 11, 12, 13 years old. The rereading still held up, at least in my nostalgic-fueled view. Ange also sent in a really good issue, considering it stars one of those less-than-fantastic folk, The Thing, number 1, written by John Byrne. This tells Ben's ever-loving origin story, how he made it off Yancey Street to become a superhero. Poignant series, and hard as this is to admit, really good. Only one image of Doom, and that panel is pretty libelous. But you come to expect that from hashtag Big Comic. Ange also sent, no surprise, an issue of Supergirl. Supergirl 24 from 2019 from Andraco and Shaner. Karen Crypto in an intergalactic dive bar, looking to learn who really destroyed Krypton. And a guest appearance from Ambush Bug. Yes, yes, and yes. Very fun read, Doc. I like that enough to go ahead and read Supergirl 25 from the app, where Kara heads to the space location of the destroyed Krypton, only to face down the alien Splice, the caretaker of Krypton. Good adventure, although I preferred the backups that filled out the extra-sized nature of this anniversary issue, especially the holiday story with Kara and Ice. Again, thanks for the inspiration on that one, Doc. From Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, a few issues that he sent that were Kickstarter books. Heroes of the Golden Age Reference Guide 6, which is a DC-style Who's Who take, but this time on public domain characters, with a new drawing of the character as well as a few panels from Golden and Silver Age stories. This issue covered 20 characters, such as Black Lion, London, Rainbow Boy, Wonder Man, not that one, and Blue Beetle. Yes, actually that one. Good stuff, similar to the League of Regrettable books from a few years back, which discussed characters we probably hadn't heard of. After reading this, I flipped back through just to see which characters, based on their looks, I think could have stuck, could have made it to the modern day. Because a lot of these, sorry Captain Courageous, you can see why maybe they didn't catch on. But of all of these, the easy one is Miss Owl, who looks like a lot of the black-clad Golden Age heroines. But also, I kind of liked Blast of the Space Rangers. His black and yellow with red trim and gold eagle on his chest. blast, favorite design of that issue. And a book from the bottom of a stack that I found recently from Free Comic Book Day 2014, Ipso Facto. Mostly a science fiction tale without all of the details revealed here at the start. I don't know if this was the case, but this has the feel of a novel idea being adapted into comic book form. There was not a natural issue break, it seemed to me. But that said, it more or less worked as a preview. And from Hoopla, a title that I became aware of via a recommendation from Sir Luke Giaconetti, and as a co-listener of the year, he has the power to recommend comics to me. Comics such as IR $ 1 and 2 from Cinebook Comics. And I wish that was Cinnabon Comics, because that would be a great combination. Anyway, our lead character in this is IRS agent Larry Max, who works in the more clandestine, more secret agent-like wing of the IRS, investigating scenarios that cross over between high finance and high crime. In this first storyline, he's looking into the source of a rich American's wealth, wealth which may have come via a relationship between Swiss banks and surviving Nazis in the post-war period. So an interesting setup for this first storyline. And though there was some discussion of U.S. politics and tax policies, there was a lot more shooting guns at people, so it still qualifies as an action-packed comic. I liked this one enough to put a note to myself to remember to read some more of these next year, maybe around April 15th or so. And from Hoopla Comics by a creator whom I have met, from whom I have a Dr. Doom sketch, and who has provided opening audio for the network, which we recently used in the triumphant return of Shortbox Showcase in late July. That artist is Michelle Fifay, and I read Copra 1 through 6, which is a cool take on the Suicide Squad concept, bad guys being used by the government to do missions, their adventures, their relationships, even character growth. All of that is here in these issues. These are what independent comics should be. It's a quirky art style. Characters that you sort of recognize but are a little off-center. Stories that are reminiscent of old-school comics but have their own unique elements. Excellent, and look forward to tackling the next volume later on in the year. And continuing a series, Postal 9 through 12, which expands the story outwards nicely. We have a new lady in town. A scary new lady in town, and we learn quickly that she is untouchable because of her connections outside of the secret small town of Eden. And the mayor's hands are tied, but her son, Mark, the postal carrier with Asperger's, has a plan. And my plan is to keep reading this title. It is rough. They added a mature label to it around issues 10 or 11, but it is good, very good. Also from Hoopla, a collection of three separate graphic novels based on a series of YA prose novels, which also spun off into a Netflix movie last year that I thought was pretty good. Enola Holmes, The Case of the Missing Marquess, The Case of the Left-Handed Lady, and The Case of the Bizarre Bouquets. These did quite strongly resemble elements from the movie, which I assume are from the original works. We have Sherlock's and Mycroft's much younger, pretty much forgotten sister, Enola, whose mother disappears and thus begins her life of mystery. The Left-Handed Lady tells a full story by itself, but then also pushes forward the mystery of Enola's mother. The Bizarre Bouquets, on the other hand, does not forward the main story much, but gives us an intriguing standalone wherein Dr. Watson is kidnapped. And it is Enola and not Sherlock who does the rescuing. Good stories, and I think there's some more volumes out there, and I'm looking forward to getting to those. And then, some kids' books that I read many from Sir Rob Lance, and also some from Pulp Reality. I read Betty and Veronica, 106, 242, and 318. Archie Double Digest, 41 and 280. Sad Sack 150, Sad Sack's Funny Friends, 40 and 71. Daffy Duck, 45 and 80, and Life with Archie, 15 and 135. I went to Half Price Books a month or so ago with my wife. I was heading to the sci-fi magazine area, but as soon as I walked in, I saw a bin full of Archie digests priced at a buck each. So I gave Mrs. Quarterbin an important task. This is the trust, the likes of which our long relationship has been built. I asked her to go through the bin of Archie digests and find the thick ones, the double-sided ones. Because you could certainly argue that 128 pages for a dollar is a good deal, but do you know what's even better? That's right, 256 pages for a dollar. Consider that a free lesson in personal finance. You're welcome. So that makes this now the time to take a break, play a promo. And when we get back, it will be time to get into our hashtag Jack Kirby Month reading.
Where am I?
In the Palace of Glittering Delights.
Who are you?
I am Andrew Leyland, and for over 200 episodes, I have covered everything genre-related, from the obvious things that everyone talks about, Star Trek, to deep dives into the early issues of The Amazing Spider-Man via the obscure, such as ITC's experimental science fiction dramas The Champions or Department S.
It's very cosmopolitan. You never know who you meet next.
In the Palace of Glittering Delights.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
Available from Two True Freaks and via your podcatcher of choice.
And we're back to talk about seasonal reading, which for August, as it contains the birthday of the king, makes this hashtag Jack Kirby Month. These comics were acquired from a variety of sources, and I'll do my best to identify those as we go. So in approximately alphabetical order, we have... Let me begin by saying that I don't have any Archie comics for this. However, if you are a Kirby fan and an Archie fan, I highly recommend a series I read last year during this month. The Archie's take on the challengers of the unknown called Explorers of the Unknown. There is a PEP digital collection that collects all of those issues. And I, again, would highly recommend it. They are great fun and the closest things that I can come up with that might constitute a Kirby slash Archie connection. Now back in 2017, during the 100th birthday year of Jack Kirby, we did a number of Kirby-themed episodes on the network, Quarter Bins and Short Box Showcase episodes. And on the Quarter Bin, I covered Eternals issue 9. So for this year, it seemed like a reasonable plan to get caught up to that issue. So I read Eternals 1 through 8. And I enjoyed these, seeing Kirby go all Chariots of the Gods. We had Deviants and Humans and Eternals. And then the Celestials showed up. All the drama, all that bombast, everything you'd want from Kirby unhinged, unedited, I mean edited by himself. It's all here. I really enjoyed these. Good stuff. Way better than the movie. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago that I nabbed a copy of the FF Essentials Volume 2. I purchased this mostly, exclusively, because it had the epic FF Annual number 2 in it. See the recent Doomspeak episode with Andy Leyland for all those details. But every August for the last few years, I've pulled it off the shelves and read a bunch of the issues. This year, those issues being Fantastic Four 28 through 33. No Doctor Doom in these issues, which is a clear oversight. And it's that kind of thinking that I think was pretty directly responsible for just, what, a mere 5 decades later? This title being canceled. But despite the doomlessness of these issues, a few of them weren't bad. This is the era where Kirby was introducing the collages into his splash pages with the photo backgrounds. Two stand out here, one from Outer Space in the story with the Skrulls, and then another one, I think, in issue 33, the Namor issue, from Under the Sea, even in black and white, maybe even more so in black and white. Those were really dramatic and beautiful pieces of art. So Kirby was really hitting it at this point. He and Kirby nearing their peak in terms of FF. Excellent. Needed more Doom. Let me make that clear. But still, excellent issues. And then a series that I've had one issue of for a while, which I supplemented with some from the app to give me a little run. Commandy, 37 through 40. The first issue of this was the last one actually written and drawn by Jack, issue 37, as Jerry Conway took over the writing on the others, with Jack still providing pencils. And I haven't read enough of the earlier, purely 100% undiluted Jack issues to figure out just how much of a change those three issues were, but they were wild and crazy, everything you'd think you'd want from the last boy on Earth. We run into varying bands of humans, including one whose entire lifespans are but a few years, and would like Commandy to donate his genetics to help their cause. And we had lots and lots of talking animals, including his sidekick, Dr. Canis. And of course, plenty of other strange beings and weird circumstances. This is a title that intrigues me. I should have started at the start. And I think one day I will. I enjoy tremendously the DC stories surrounding the Great Disaster, you know, told within that version of the future of DC. So I need to put the earlier issues of this title on my list, and maybe I will revisit The Last Boy on Earth next August. And for 50 cents from Pulp Reality, Machine Man, number 3 from 1978, an issue featuring the living robot going up against 10-4, the mean machine. I had not read any, or at least many, of these issues before of Machine Man, and I found this one fun. I love me my science fiction, and this goes for that combo of high-tech and cosmic and delivered it pretty well. It is wordy. Kirby could be wordy in the 70s. But for me, I could take that as just part of what made this issue so fun. And featuring the excellent Mangog and Ragnarok storyline, I read The Mighty Thor, 154 to 159, featuring Stan and Jack at or near their melodramatic peak. We have Ulick and Carnilla and Loki, Sif, the Warriors Three, the Recorder. So many characters from all around that side, that version of the Marvel U of the era. It is a tremendous story. The earliest time, I'm guessing, that Ragnarok was a storyline in the Thor books. A 4-issue, excellent storyline, and then I read a few additional stories after that that were decent as well, including a retelling of Thor's debut appearance. And back to the DC side of the aisle, the story of the one-man Army Corps, OMAC 1 through 3. We get Buddy Blank turned into OMAC by the orbiting Brother Eye. And under the auspices of the not Orwellian at all Global Peace Agency, he fights against the technological and social injustices of the world that's coming. Or, since this was 45 years ago, some of it is the world that's now here. There is some real darkness in these OMAC issues, especially the first issue with the Build a Friend product line. There was also a scene later where OMAC's flying device is destroyed, reducing him to flying around in a buzzing chair, which I have to say reminded me of a different Jack Kirby character. Wacky and weird, yes, it was Kirby in the 70s at DC. That's part of the expectation. But this one was solid, interesting, and intense. I'm going to say intense, even more intense than I expected. And from the Cap Masterworks volume, I read the Captain America stories only that appeared in Tales of Suspense 59 through 66. In these ones, the big star was the Red Skull, appearing in a few issues, and we also met Agent 13. Most of the stories, though, were just general interest bad guys. And also in these early days, Cap seemed to be doing a lot of the Silver Age trope of gymnastics demonstrations, tumbling, or self-defense, public events that would be disrupted. But those gave Jack the opportunity to draw Cap in action. And some of these 10-page stories were something like 6 or 7 pages of action scene slash fight scenes. So this early on in the Cap revival, 64-65, 1964-1965, it was interesting to see what Stan and Jack were trying to do, struggling to come up with stories for the character. Usually interesting, and often pretty good. Then we get a few that are not totally, fully Kirby, but are in fact from the Topps Comics run of their Kirbyverse, which were titles or characters that were created by Kirby, but then the comics were produced by others. I've covered a few of these on the Quarter Bin, but found a few more. In this case, Jack Kirby's Teen Agents 1 and 2, written by Kurt Busiek. And he did a good job of putting Kirby's characters in situations that were wild in a sci-fi way. And the concept of young folk, teens, banding together, that is such a Kirby concept from all the way back to the Newsboy Legion and plenty of other of his works from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. What you don't know with these is how much is Kirby and how much is the creator, in this case Busiek, doing a riff on Kirby, their take on the King. But however that worked out, these Topps books were a fun experiment, at the very least. And that is what I have for Jack Kirby books, and I think that was a pretty good collection, a pretty wide variety. Next month, for September, we celebrate hashtag Fantasy Comics Month, and we will see exactly what that brings our way. But we are not yet done with our seasonal reading, because August has a few other things going on with it as well, beyond just celebrating Jack Kirby. First up, the end of summer. So I read some beach and lake and vacation-themed Archie books, such as Pep Digital 93, Betty and Veronica, On a Boat. These are mostly excuses, but Archie's girls in a variety of swimsuits, let's be honest. And it has been that way since the 1950s, you learn, reading a collection like this. Actually, pretty good stories, although one seemed strangely familiar. I mentioned last month of a trend of Archie stories about barbecue grills running out of control down the streets of Riverdale. This time, the very first story was about a canoe running out of control down the streets of Riverdale. And, of course, in addition to the end of summer, August also ushers in back-to-school season, at least in many states here in the U.S. And in that spirit, I found some comics to read. Pep Digital 106, Archie vs. Principal Weatherby. Lots of stories about Archie managing to annoy the principal, sometimes intentional, sometimes not so intentional. My favorite subset of these actually take place during the summer, when their interactions are more unexpected, like Archie as the lifeguard at the beach that the bee is visiting, or caddying at the golf course where the bee is playing at, that sort of thing. And on that back-to-school theme, I landed on a magical school series, this one from Marvel Comics, from just a few years ago, written by Scotty Young. Strange Academy 1 through 12. And even though it's named after Doctor Strange, the main on-site leader is Brother Voodoo. I guess he's Dr. Voodoo here because, you know, professors like to pump up their titles. If you know what I'm saying. The faculty at the academy included Nico, Wanda, Ileana, Magic, and Shaman. And the students were youngsters from all across the Marvel world, including a frost giant and a Hellstrom child and a secret zombie and many more. You know the basics of the story. Kids learn their powers while learning about the powers of friendship and self-confidence and all that stuff. And dramas happen along the way. It's not groundbreaking by any means, but it's not bad. And I was not expecting Howard the Duck, private investigator, to show up to help solve a mystery, but there you go. And then one that I saw at Pulp Reality that I could not resist, given the calendar and my job. Yogi Bear Goes to College, from Gold Key, 1967. The lead story, a little over half the issue, features Yogi getting a university scholarship. I admit, in a way that seems improbable to me. I know, he's smarter than the average bear, but the scholarship was presented as more of a coupon, where whoever brought it to the college for admission would earn the scholarship. Now, my campus offers free tuition to any Ohio resident with the requisite GPA and/or test scores. And I'll be honest, those requirements are not super, super high. But our scholarships are not just a coupon that you clip out and write in your name, which is pretty much how Yogi got into college. And of course, the dean wanted him out ASAP and eventually did so, allowing Yogi to graduate with a degree in forestry, which enabled him to take over the ranger's job at Jellystone Park. So despite some questionable representations about the nature of higher education, it was a pretty funny story, so I'll allow it. And also, more seasonal reading of a sort, in the sense of aligning with a new Disney Plus show. I read from 2004 the series that seems to be the major inspiration for the show, She-Hulk 1 through 6. This is the series written by Dan Slott, which has Jen starting her job at the wonderfully named Goodman, Lieber, Kurtzberg, and Holloway, specializing in the burgeoning field of superhuman law. Great combination of fight action, legal action, and character building. Very fun, very good, and based on the two episodes I've watched so far, I think I'm going to enjoy the show as much as I did these comic books. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, I like where the storyline of Something is Killing the Children is going. Secret Society of Supervillains was a great nostalgic read. Camelot 3000 and IR dollar sign were both quite good, but in terms of my absolute favorites, I need to look at the Kirby books. And sadly, the lack of Doctor Doom dropped the FF issues below the standard. OMAC and Machine Man were just loopy, wacky fun. But I'm going to go with the start of the Ragnarok and Mangog storyline Thor 154, my favorite read of the month. Next month, I'm not really sure what I'm going to be reading other than some fantasy comics for September, but other than that, who knows? And to be honest, because of a couple of circumstances, I don't know how many comics I'm going to be reading during September. For one thing, my semester has started, and I'm teaching a full load, which does cut into the comic reading time a little bit. But also, late in August, my father passed away. And so between the mood that I expect to carry through September, and frankly, a couple trips to Eastern North Carolina and dealing with a whole lot of paperwork and legal and financial stuff, I'm just not sure if that's going to lead me to read a ton of comic books for escapism or not many comic books at all. But like I said, who knows? But whatever I do end up reading, I will be here to talk about those books that I read during September, however many or few that will end up being. That episode ought to be out in early October. Feel free to let me know what you think of the episode, what you think of any of these books that I've mentioned. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.